I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on March 14, 2024. We'll get started right away with our first bill, House File 4110, Representative Hemison Yeager. And I will move that House File 4110 be laid over for possible inclusion. So to the bill, Representative Hemison Yeager.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Vang, and thank you, members of the committee, for hearing this bill today. This bill was actually brought to me by the Minnesota Landscape and Nursery Association, and it's definitely piqued my interest because we have Bailey Nurseries in Woodbury, and they're a very large company, very great company kind of in the area. And this kind of speaks to the over 55,000 employees in like landscaping, and 60% of them are Spanish-speaking. However, the certification test right now is not offered in Spanish. It's only offered in English. And what this bill does is it keeps things short and sweet. It basically ensures that the commercial pesticide applicator license test will be made available in Spanish by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture by January 1st of 2025. I have complete confidence that the agency will be able to do this. They have been doing a lot when it comes to translation services. There's even an enterprise translation office now to assist state agencies with this. If you frequent the driver vehicle services, the Department of Public Safety, they have a virtual assistant in many languages. The driver's exam knowledge test is in multiple languages. You can find multiple languages, materials from the Department of Health, the Department of Human Services. So this is something I think that we need to be considering and really encouraging our agencies to do, especially as we increase in diversity in our state. With that, I think I'll leave it over to my testifiers.
All right. So we have two testifiers signed up. So our first one is Jose Andres Janelle from Landscape Renovations. If you can make your way to the table, identify yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Wow, it's a little intimidating. good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for your time. My name is Jose Andres Genel. I'm the Chief Operations Officer for a local business called Landscape Renovations, which has over 80% of Spanish-speaking employees. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 4110. This proposal will have a statewide impact in inclusivity, economic empowerment, and public health. By offering the commercial pesticide applicator exam in Spanish, we will be breaking down language barriers and providing equal opportunities for Spanish-speaking individuals to pursue different career paths within our industry. This isn't just about fairness. It's about tapping into a pool of talent that has long been overlooked and underutilized. By doing so, we not only enrich our workforce, but also strengthen our communities through better wages and access to more professional opportunities. Moreover, this bill will help stop the growth of informal markets. Without proper certification, individuals may resort to unregulated pesticide applications methods, posing significant risks to public health and environmental sustainability, including the beautiful lakes we all enjoy. Language should never be a barrier to understanding safety protocols and best practices. By offering this exam in both English and Spanish, we empower individuals and business owners to make informed decisions that protect both themselves, the workforce, and our environment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jose. Our next testifier is Aaron Smith from Nursery Lead for Huffman and Manera Nursery and Landscape. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Aaron Smith. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm the nursery leader at Hoffman and McNamara Nursery and Landscape, a company located in Hastings, Minnesota. I'm here to show my support for House File 4110. I've been with the company for over 14 years, 9 in my current role as part of the leadership team, and I work very closely with the other departments in our company. Roughly 63% of our employees are Latino and speak Spanish as their primary language. Only 5 of our employees working in the field have their pesticide applicator license. None of the 5 speak Spanish as their primary language. These 5 certified pesticide applicators are simply not enough for our workload. This makes meeting demand difficult and also prevents growth. We have spent time and resources trying to help several of our Spanish-speaking employees study and prepare for taking the test in English and have yet to have anyone pass. The reality is that even if you know how to speak English, taking the test in English is completely different. I can speak and understand Spanish, but if you ask me to read or write in Spanish, the results would be embarrassing. I have no doubt that if the applicator test was available in a Spanish format, companies like ours would see benefits such as when more people have the appropriate credentials, better decisions can be made regarding applications. What we can do for work is sometimes limited by how many licensed applicators we have, meaning we may have to turn down work even though we otherwise have the capacity to do it. A licensed applicator needs to be present during worker protection standards training. Having someone lead the training who also speaks the language it is being taught in is extremely valuable and ensures that nothing is lost in translation. In our company, obtaining the license results in better compensation, giving our Spanish-speaking amigos the opportunity to obtain a higher wage. We see a direct tie between people who get licenses, certifications, and education, and their value to us as a company. It is my belief that the same people that become valuable to us as a company become valuable in their communities as well. The more knowledgeable everyone is regarding the products they use and how important understanding the best practices, the safer our environment and the people in our communities are. In short, the passing of House File 4110 would allow companies like ours to perform more work more efficiently in a safer manner and provide more opportunities for a better life for our employees, whom without we would be lost. Thank you for your consideration and time.
Thank you, Aaron. So we'll move to discussion to the bill. Questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for this bill. I think there's a need for this, and I signed on as an author. I do hope you give me a little bit of comfort language, though. We all know that the label is the law. Representative Hansen and I agree on that. And this talks about the exam itself being available in Spanish, but those out there doing the actual spraying, when they pick up this container of chemical, that usually is in English, the directions, the mixing rates, things like that. So how would you handle that in terms of the actual mixing and application of the chemical if it's a Spanish worker who doesn't understand English?
Representative Hemison-Yeager.
Yes, great question. Something I have been discussing actually with the Department of Agriculture as well. So I even did a little bit of online searching, and just to start out answering your question, the safety data sheets are often translated into Spanish from English by the manufacturer. So that's kind of one step, the safety information. When it comes to the uses of the use and kind of like the mixing of the chemicals, it is my understanding that there are some groups, there are some organizations that help to do the training, and that oftentimes it's the training that is much more valuable than just reading the label. I might ask to phone a friend if that's okay to kind of go into more of like the work that these organizations are doing. Maybe.
Right, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Felipe Yescas. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. To answer that question, Representative Anderson, the knowledge comes from the training. And we're forming partnerships with Latino-run organizations that have work centers and facilitators to, in order to provide this training in Spanish, so that then Spanish speakers can take the test in Spanish.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I understand that, but what about when they get out to do an actual job, and if they're alone, for example, and pick up a bottle of chemicals, would they be able to read the instructions on that bottle?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, all of that knowledge will be included in our training. We do a lot of training already in-house for a lot of our members and their workforce, so we'll make sure that that's included in the training as well. And like Representative Hammerson-Yeager was mentioning, a lot of the manufacturers already provide the translated label on their websites, and our members provide that for their employees as well.
Further discussion? Representative Chow.
I just want to thank the previous testifier for coming down and advocating for your coworkers and your employees. I think that's important, and thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, thank you. A closing remarks, Representative Hemmingsen-Yeager?
Sure. Thank you. So again, thank you for the time for hearing this bill. I think this is a really cool bill because it's pro-worker, it's pro-business, it's bipartisan. I believe a third of the authors are from the minority party, so thank you for that bipartisan support. It's supported by the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs, and I think this is not only going to bring equity to Spanish-speaking agricultural workers, but also ensure that we have more licensed professionals to know how to work with these products, which is also going to bring safety to us and to the industry. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hemmingsen-Yeager. Hemmingsen-Yeager. So House File 4110 is laid over. The motion is layover is renewed and the bill is laid over. The next bill that we have is House File 4625, Representative Hansen. And while he makes his way there, we'll do approval of the minutes since there is a quorum present. Vice Chair Purcell, may I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move the minutes from March 12, 2024.
Representative Purcell moves to approve the minutes from March 12, 2024. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the minutes from March 12, 2024 are approved. Representative Hansen, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've moved House File 4625 be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee.
Okay. To the bill, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And House File 4625, members, we've already talked quite a bit about nitrates and nitrate contamination, and I think I've testified before that there's no silver bullet. This is going to require a comprehensive approach, and so 4625 is looking at what the state does. What do we use for nitrogen fertilizer? And, you know, we've gone through the clean energy goals on reduction 100%. This is looking at having a goal. So first we would assess how much fertilizer the state is buying, nitrogen fertilizer, and then reduce that by 25% by 2030. So it's looking at ourselves as a state and what do we purchase with the public dollars and getting a handle on that. You can't manage what you can't measure.
All right. I don't see any testimony or testifiers signed up, so we'll take questions from the committee or discussion to the bill. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang and Chair Hansen. I'm just looking at, you know, kind of the scope of the bill, and, you know, thank you for it, and just kind of understanding it a little bit more. You know, the Department of Agriculture is already the one that monitors fertilizer and whatnot, but, you know, just kind of wondering, you know, the MPCA is bringing in to be the lead on this, and, you know, just kind of wondering, you know, why the bringing in of another one of the other agencies, and, you know, wondering the background behind it.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Nelson, so we're looking at what the state purchases, so rather than the use and the regulation that the Department of Ag does. Since I've introduced the bill, I've also had the Department of Administration come forward and say maybe they're the better one because they handle that purchasing. So I think those conversations are going to continue because we're looking at what does the state purchase and where do they use it versus the regulatory framework that the Department of Ag has.
Representative Nelson.
So kind of, you know, maybe just, I don't know how much the state does purchase, and clearly there's a reason for this study, but I mean, does this include everything from like what the research at the University of Minnesota does and what all is included in state usage? Because I think on one hand, if this were to you know, be covered under, like, what is utilized at the university? Will this affect research and things like that?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Nelson, you know, as I've been told many times, the state does not have control over the University of Minnesota, that they existed before we became a state. So this is the state agencies. This would be, you know, probably Capital Architecture Board, or, you know, what are we using for lawn fertilizer? You know, it would probably be the MinSCU system. What are they using for lawn fertilizer? Those type of things is where the, so the research is, that's University of Minnesota, that's outside of the purview of the state agency.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The agency that comes to my mind is the DNR, and a lot of the plantings and things they do. And I'm also thinking about WMAs, where farmers may have the ability to go in there and plant corn, for example, and leave part of it and then harvest part of it. And I would imagine that would be part of your reduction goal. You know, we've already banned some chemicals that they can use, neonics, for example, on WMAs. And I've talked to guys that say it's no use to keep on doing it because the yields just don't do as well as otherwise they would if they could use some of these chemicals and such. So again, DNR comes to my mind. Would this impact WMAs and how that would impact farmers doing that?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. I think if you look on lines 1.11 and 1.12, it details the purchase of nitrogen fertilizer by state agencies. So generally, I think what you're talking about is there's a contract with the farmer is providing the inputs, the state is not buying, the DNR is not buying the fertilizer to go on.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Yeah, I get that. But again, we've already banned the neonicotinoids on some of these areas. And is this just the beginning of a regulation that says you must reduce the use of fertilizer on these areas? So that would be my concern, that we're just starting down this road of, again, managing what the state would purchase. And then with your reduction goal, we're going past the purchase part of it. We're looking at usage and then trying to reduce that usage. So I think longer term, it could impact some of these things. But again, those are my concerns. We'll have to wait and see what happens to them. So thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions for the bill author. One, how did you come up with the 25% reduction if we haven't measured yet? And shoot, I'm forgetting what my second one is, so maybe I'll think of it while you're answering this.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Purcell, as you may remember from the Environment Committee, yes, I think it was yesterday on the salt bill, I set a 25% goal as a conservative amount.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you. And is there a thinking, I guess maybe depending on which agency would do the test, but there's not an associated cost with this, or is that part of the what we don't know, I don't see a fiscal note?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, we're waiting for a fiscal note.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Nelson.
You know, I think, you know, part of the reason for the study, thank you, Chair Vang, I think part of the reason for the study is I don't know if we know how much is being purchased, and you know, I think presumably it's probably mostly lawn fertilizer and things like that. But you know, is there a point that we might find that it is an amount that is needed? Or I mean, we can always have goals, but you know, is the 25% a little bit preemptive of, you know, I don't want to admit that maybe we need more, but what if somebody said, oh, there's more fertilizer that should be used to have a healthy green lawn, or, you know, what was the goals behind it?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't think, Representative Nelson, you're saying you wanted more lawn fertilizer. I don't think that's what you were advocating. But again, we have a nitrate crisis in certain areas, and the state and what we do with our public dollars could be part of that. So this is an idea of how to reduce that use. but we can't reduce it without measuring.
Representative Nelson.
I think Representative Hansen, or Representative Hansen, Anderson, there's a lot of sons in here, but anyway, I don't know if somebody like the DNR, if they're doing just tree seedlings, do they have, are any of the seedlings that are planted, is there any, fertilizer to help get those things started? And, I think that could be, crucial to be able to make sure that, the seedlings that are started have a good start. And then, and I don't know what is there. I think there's probably a lot of science behind that, but it'd be just kind of interesting to, when it covers a lot of these areas.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, that's why we need to look. I mean, none of us really know, this hasn't been, and just as I mentioned, we're looking at this for salt as well. I mean, several of these issues we talk about, but why, maybe first we look at what we're doing as a state and as policymakers affecting this. So.
Further discussion, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Rick Hansen. So I have a question. I was thinking about the agencies that come to mind for me are the Minnesota Department of Education. Curious to know, if we have any regulations on that. I think there's some kind of Parents' Right to Know Act, but I don't know if maybe House Research could help answer that question, but curious to know if we have any regulations regarding pesticides or fertilizers on school property.
Representative Hansen.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Ream, there is somewhat old law from the time when I was at the Department of Agriculture on notification on pesticides, but not for fertilizer. So there's a provision in 18B that Mr. Sullivan probably has already found to recite, but that would be not on fertilizer, on pesticide.
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I don't have that citation up quite yet. I was looking for it, but I agree with your description that there is a parental right to know requirement for schools for pesticides only.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really curious to see what agencies are using this, and I think it'd be great to have a baseline for what we're looking at. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
All right, getting repetitive here. So I think, thank you for your question, Representative Ream. I think, thinking of a high school ag class and they're planting a garden, are they going to be limited on their, or is it going to change their abilities? It's going to affect their curriculum or things like that. I'm curious on, are we going to require the 25% cut to come in other areas so maybe a class can continue on? Just kind of curious about this. So,
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, and I would, Representative Nelson, I go back to 1.11, and it's the details, the purchase of nitrogen fertilizer by state agencies, not independent school districts, not the University of Minnesota, but state agencies. So.
Representative Anderson.
We're just having a sidebar conversation here. Maybe I missed it, so I apologize, but I wouldn't think this would apply to our local school districts, would it? No.
Further discussion? All right, closing remarks. Representative Hansen.
I'd ask for your support.
All right, Representative Hansen renews his motion for House File 4625 to be moved to the Environment Committee. The next bill, all those in favor of the motion for House File 4625 to be moved to the Environment Committee, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. The ayes have it, and the motion prevails. House File 4625 is referred to the Environment Committee. The next bill we have is House File 3512. Representative Hansen, your State Fair Transportation Plan. If you can please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd move House File 3512 be re-referred to the Transportation Committee.
All right, to the bill, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The Minnesota State Fair is a very popular institution for the state of Minnesota, and as it is popular, it continues to grow. and as it grows, that means there's more people. And the state fair, and the reason the bill is here is that's under the jurisdiction of the Agriculture Department. You also have Met Council involvement with transit. You have the Minnesota Department of Transportation. You have Ramsey County, the city of St. Paul. And then you have a whole series of other suburbs reaching out, first, second, and third tier suburbs, of people trying to get to the fair. And last year was an especially challenging fair. If anybody tried to get there during some peak times, it was a snag or a snarl of transportation challenges. And at that time, a number of us were hearing from our constituents there need to be something done. And as we've come out of COVID, the fair is becoming more and more popular, and it will be projected to become more and more popular. So Representative Hornstein and myself were at the fair. We presented that we needed to have some type of long-term planning, both for responding to the fair for this year, but also in the long run. Since that time, and that's the reason for the bill, we actually had the bill drafted during the fair and showed it at the state fair. And I applaud the state fair for working on a plan. And the reason we're still moving this forward is beyond the state fair, you have other jurisdictions that need to be involved. I have with us today the state fair who can talk about the work that they are doing. They are struggling with workforce shortages in dealing with how do they deal with transportation. But they're going to walk through a little bit on the plan they have. And I think they're going to say they don't need any money. But I'm so I would refer to my testimony.
All right. Welcome to the committee. If you can introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Thank you, thank you, members of the committee. My name is Renee Alexander, and I am the CEO of the Minnesota State Fair. I have been in this role since last May, but I have been on the leadership team for the fair for about 19 years. So anytime I can talk about the fair is a great day for me. I brought along with me members of our operations team, our full-time staff, who work vigilantly year-round on our transportation plan and work with our partners throughout the year. So in your, there's information handout for you regarding our transportation plan. I would start with, our goal is always to provide the best guest experience we possibly can, and we realize that that starts when people head out for the fair for the day, and it's a door-to-door experience, and understand that sometimes it can be frustrating based on the level of the volume of traffic that we have. So if you turn to the first page, just to give you a little overview of the fair, last year we had 1.8 million guests that visited the fair during the 12 days. So on our big days, we can see well over 200,000 people at the fair. So thinking about in comparison, that's about 3.5 Vikings games. So our goal is, you know, to move those people as efficiently and safely as possible. So we've got a couple overviews here that show you just where the fair is located. We're midway between downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul. We're pretty well landlocked as far as we have the University of Minnesota, our neighbors to our west, Falcon Heights to our north, and the city of St. Paul to our east and our south. On the next page, we talk about our park and ride plan. This is a service we've been offering, a free service we've been offering to our guests since 1974. It initially started with Metro Transit offering that service, but due to charter requirements, we switched over to Lorenz Bus Service in 2009. In 2014, based on a traffic study we did with an independent service in 2011, it was determined to build a transit hub that we have on the western corner of our fair. That moved all of the bus traffic, or majority of our bus traffic, off of Como Avenue and moved it onto the fairgrounds. We offer 30 park and ride lots with over 14,000 spots, and we have staff on those lots throughout those operations. So our staff is working year-round to find source different lots. We kind of do the inner ring of transportation. So it's looking for locations, schools, churches, private businesses that can provide that park and ride service. So that's an ongoing process for us to build out that park and ride system. On the next page, you'll see information on our express bus service. That's a pay-to-ride service, and that is handled primarily with Metro Transit, MVTA, and Southwest Transit. In 2021, Metro Transit was struggling with driver shortages, so while we had 9 lots in 2019, we went down to 3 lots in 2021. Last year, we increased to 4 lots. So we're seeing the increases there, drivers are coming back. But that has been one of the biggest challenges as it relates to, they provide that kind of that second ring service. So having the about 50% less lots has certainly compounded the issue that we have as people try and come closer to the fair to park. We also have a Metro Mobility Service, which provides accessible drop-off locations on the south and north end of the fairgrounds. The next page just shows you an idea of where those lots are located. Both the park and ride lots are 30 lots that we run free service, and then the express lots, the paid service. The next page you'll see the numbers of ridership. This past year in 2023, our ridership, so that's total number of rides. So you split that in half. We had 736 people that took the bus to the fair, used some form of transit. So that is 41% of our transit. So I think we're doing an incredible job of moving people through as easily as we can. But we do tell folks to make a plan A, plan B, and plan C, knowing that sometimes it can be a challenge. Rideshare and taxis are another service that are used. We've created locations on both the north and south end of the fairgrounds for pickup and drop-off locations. We geofence the fairgrounds to get those locations to the drivers, but as we all know, it's an independent contractor situation, so that doesn't always happen that they get dropped off at their exact locations. Bicycles and motorcycles. We have increased our bike lot usage. We have capacity for over 1,000 bikes during the fair at 3 locations. With our transitway that runs to our kind of to our south and between the University of Minnesota and the fair, that's used. Como Avenue was redone a few years ago that provide additional bike lanes. So we're seeing more bike traffic coming to the fair, which relieves a lot of the pressure on the arteries around us. Motorcycles, we're seeing a decrease in numbers, and we're not exactly sure why, but we have 200 spots for motorcycles. On-site parking. We have 5,000 parking spots, and that includes over 800 accessible parking spaces, which is well above the required limit. We also have to make sure our employees have a place to park. Backstock trailers for all of our vendors, our food and beverage vendors. So there's a whole network that's happening that relates to getting access for others other than our guests just to put the fair on. And then finally, it's our neighborhood. We couldn't do it without the neighborhood parking. We work closely with Como Park to our east. There are residents and businesses that sell parking during the fair, and it's a nice little source of revenue for them. We work closely with those neighborhood groups to make sure that we provide extra security, we pick up garbage in the neighborhood. So our goal is really to be a good neighbor, not just a big neighbor. We know that it can be disruptive for our neighbors during those 12 days, so we do the best we can to create a good experience for them as well. I think one of the biggest challenges we had last year, in addition to seeing a decrease in those number of Metro Transit lots from pre-pandemic levels, is construction. There was construction happening on Cleveland Avenue, which is our main artery to the west, and also on Larpinder Avenue to the north. So that helped compound some of the issues as well. We try and do a lot of messaging as we can through our website and letting people know when lots are closed and direct them to other areas. But I will also say we've had several large-scale events that have reached out to us to ask us about our transportation plan. So it's something that we're proud of. It's something we know that we will never arrive, that we will continue to improve. And as Representative Hansen here, we are not looking for any appropriations. We'll continue to strengthen our relationships we have a great relationship with Metro Transit, St. Paul Police Department that handles the traffic around the fairgrounds, and plenty of other partners that help make the transportation plan work.
Thank you, CEO Renee. Discussion to the bill. Representative Nelson.
Chair Vang and Chair Hansen, thank you for this. The plan here, the request for the plan or whatever, updating it. And, I think the, kind of nationwide Minnesota State Fair is kind of the state fair to go. I remember when I graduated high school, I moved down to Kansas and the state fair was going on. So I'm like, all right, I got to go to the Kansas State Fair. Not speak ill against Kansas, but I was disappointed to find out that not everything is like the Minnesota State Fair. But, it is, the park and ride that has, really kind of been a big help in alleviating a lot of the pressure directly around the fair. And one of the things I'm wondering, is there a bus services, for like park and ride that would be close to the light rail, just help, because one of the issues is a park and ride, that parking lot fills up. And then, some of the people will park in the neighborhoods, which get those, the neighborhoods upset with it. And I'm just wondering, is there any park and ride that could, service a light rail stop, which would then, be a bigger artery that would, be able to go out?
Renee?
Chair Vang, Representative Nelson. Yeah, I mean, that's something we can certainly look at. I think the challenge is finding a lot that's close and that has the capacity that we need that's near a light rail stop. So that's where we really, really struggle with finding a place that has the parking spots that we need to make an impact.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, often we debate bills here, that probably will not become law or will become law. I think this is an example of a bill that, because we started this last year, we've had conversations and it's making a difference. One of the things, as we've talked about this during the interim, is we looked across the street at the Sears parking lot, and there's a lot of state employees that will be going out to the fair. They have jobs to do at the fair. Maybe there's a way of having that as a park and ride for the state employees, so we have space that we could maybe use within the state system. And then when you look at, I think going through CEO Alexander's topics here, when you went from 9 hubs down to 3 and 5, particularly in throughout those exterior ring suburbs, that has a huge impact. And that doesn't mean we build a facility at each place, but looking for areas where we can use existing infrastructure. We know the fair comes every year. And I think the fair's done a good job here of developing a plan, during the interim. But we do have all these other entities, and how do we actually make sure they're coordinating? And that's why it's going to transportation to continue that discussion and have it out in the open, in committee, so we can, because I think everybody loves the fair, but they don't love getting stuck in traffic or, walking a long way. And it's also challenging. If you've spent a long day at the fair, you're pretty tired at the end. And how do you, now I've got to get home.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you for that. And, as we also look at the logistics and talking about being tired and, we think of vendors, I think of 4-H, and, those that are, whether it's a livestock project or something like that. And I think that's one thing that I've heard, my oldest daughter had the, opportunity to be able to take her steer to the state fair. And, it was a great experience, but it was also, the load in and load out. And so I'm hopeful that in this plan, we can also look at, really the vendors and the exhibitors that are able to, it's a challenge, whether it's 4-H or open class or FFA, it's, being able to look at that as well, and not just the attendees, but the exhibitors as well.
CEO Renee.
Representative Nelson, that is something we also are always looking at. That changeover is definitely a challenge, especially from 4-H to open class. So the trailers have gotten bigger. There's more animals, the campers, and everything else that goes along with it. So that Sunday's a tough day for our team as we do those changeovers. But we've looked at timing and how we can do that to streamline that process as much as possible. But it's an important part of what we do.
Thank you.
Representative Ring.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and others. I was one of the unfortunate people that went to the state fair last year and had a really difficult time finding a parking space. I ended up going to the fair on a bus via Southwest Transit, and that was amazing. And
a lot of people in my area, in the Chanhassen-Chask area, Eden Prairie area, we use Southwest Transit, and the buses are full, and they run regularly. So if we could replicate that in other areas, I think that would be really well received. There are really no complaints for Southwest Transit other than, you know, we just want them to do it more. They do it for other events like Vikings games and stuff like that. And when the light rail transit does come out to Eden Prairie, people will be able to park there, and it's a great spot. I think, you know, it's going to be really busy, and it's always really busy during the state fair, but it's an excellent way for people to learn about public transit, too. People who would normally not consider, you know, riding on a bus come out and ride Southwest Transit, and they love it. So thank you for bringing our attention to this, and I appreciate seeing this legislation here.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Chair Vang. And I just want to say, so this is more of a transportation world question. So as it comes to transportation, can you make sure that you work on some language in here, Chair Hansen, around, because I'm concerned that with the service level increase of at least 100% over the service level of 2023, if we write that into law, that could pull from existing transit options. And so I don't want this to be pulling from what we already are delivering across the metro for transit. So some language in here that we can use that limits it to above and beyond existing services or something like that to make sure that we aren't taking all of our resources and putting it on the state fair when people still need to get to work.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tapke, that's the intent, to keep working on this. And you know, we've already made great progress, and I'm not wedded to any particular thing there. We want to just make sure the planning is occurring. Everybody's involved. We have we're looking forward to a good experience for people. So that particular requirement, I'm not wedded to that and happy to change it.
Thank you.
All right. Further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Alexander, I can't imagine the things you have to do around that fair time and keeping everything straight, but congratulations, great job. Looking at the numbers you provided, look over the years, if I'm reading this correctly here, of your total attendance of like 1.8 million, nearly 1.5 million took some form of transportation. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's actually, if you cut that number in half, so that's a round trip. So we're looking at about 736 actual riders, because usually our hope is if they came that they're also going to go home.
Unless they get lost.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one other question. You know, I think the key to getting this back up to where it had been in the past was the Metro Transit. And everybody is seeing shortages of bus drivers. But the trend here, you went from 3 and 2021 to 4 in 2023. So that's a positive trend. You look for that to continue this year and in future years.
CEO Renee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, yes, we would welcome Metro Transit to come back at full strength. If they could be back to 9 lots, that would be great for us. It's based on what their availability is and what they're able to do.
Representative Cha.
Thank you for coming down here, and I know the fairs are important to all communities, but I didn't hear you touch on, children with special needs and, you know, accessibility for disability. Can you touch on that a little bit about how we're going to improve that and your plan for that?
CEO Renee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Cha. So we are, our accessibility, the number of the actual spaces that we have on the grounds is well above the number that we need. So I believe we're around 110 that are required, and we're at 800 spots. We also have a lot on Oscar Johnson Arena that is an accessible lot that's a shuttle to as well. So we're always trying to make sure that we've got as much room as we can for accessible needs.
Representative Cha.
Yeah, just a lot of the time I have these conversations, it's mostly around senior accessibility, and then families with special needs, they're the ones having difficult access to, you know, large event venues like this. So please keep that in mind. Thank you.
All right. Further discussion? Seeing none, closing remarks. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for hearing the bill. We'll continue these conversations. I saw Met Council nodding up in the audience, so we will be working on this and trying to make sure we've got a good product for Minnesota.
All right, thank you. And with that, Representative Hansen renews his motion for House File 3512 be referred to the Transportation Committee. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The ayes have it. The motion prevails. House File 3512 is be referred to the Transportation Committee. Thank you, members. We are done early today. Our next meeting is Tuesday, March 19th. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.